And next on CoastSiderRadio.com, we have Coast Sider Musicians, hosted by Harry the Y. In this program, you will hear from musicians and people have to do with the musical scene on the Coast Side. And today we have as our guest the Grand Puba of CoastSiderRadio.com, Michelle Dragony. And Michelle, this may be a little redundant, but welcome to CoastSiderRadio.com.
Why, thank you, Harry the Y.
And why don't we start off by, let's find out a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've lived on the Coast Side since 1989 and grew up in Silicon Valley brat. But when Silicon Valley became siliconized, had to move over to Half Moon Bay where there was green grass, blue water, and fresh air. And I love it here.
Well, tell us a little about your education. Where did you go to school? What did you major in? Or did you major in partying all through college?
No, actually, I was a really good girl. I was actually pretty hardworking, 20-year-old. I flipped houses, and I have 12 years of college. My mother always used to say, finish what you start. Of course, I never knew what I wanted to do. So I have a degree in journalism. I have a degree in graphics. I have a degree in English literature and a master's in instructional design and a couple of teaching credentials. So everything that I've, taken courses in has to do with communication one way or another. And Coast Sider Radio's mission is to communicate between and with Coast Siders. It's something that I found when my son was small, and I was on the Wavecrest petition, and we were asking everybody, do you want to build a middle school at Wavecrest or do you want to rebuild it at Cunha? And I remember 2/3 of my playgroup couldn't actually sign the petition because they didn't live in Half Moon Bay. And I think that always sort of irked me. I thought it was kind of unfair because, they would be really kind of hosed. They'd have to come all the way past 92 to get to Wavecrest and then back through 92 traffic. Having, lived the middle school and the high school life over the last 10 years, that would have been a horrible decision. But that's one of the communications problems that we have on the Coast Side is that we have sort of El Granada, Moss Beach, and Monterra, sort of North Coast, and then we have Half Moon Bay. And I like to bring everybody together so we're all one happy family.
Well, before we get to the one happy family, you left out a significant accomplishment of yours, and that is you have written books.
Well, I wrote one book. I wrote it twice. So it was a second edition. So technically, I think I am pluralized as an author. The book was Live to Die, The Birthday, Death Day Planning Process. And it's actually kind of funny. I wrote the book because even with all that college, I was a stay-at-home mom for almost 17 years and virtually unemployable. So I thought, well, I better reinvent myself. And so my mom had passed away and my sister-in-law had passed away. And their deaths were both complicated and simple. Death is both those things. My family had sort of acted in a very proactive manner over the years towards death. So when the deaths happened, all the probate issues were not an issue because we had wills, we had trust, we had medical directives. We really knew where everybody stood in regards to life and death decisions. And after my mom died, I realized really what a beautiful experience my father, my brother, and I had. And it was largely because we weren't stressed out by the things that, you don't know what that person wants. And that feeling of lack of control when you're going through the death process is pretty profoundly disturbing. And we didn't have that. We knew exactly what she wanted, and it was a joy to allow her to pass in the manner that she had always dreamed. And so I wrote the book to help other people out, because it's not really that difficult. If you read my book, it takes you through the steps of, it's really, how do you communicate? Like with my brother, he's a real quiet person, and I'm not, and I'm older, which is always hard to be the older sister. So part of this book was designed, how would I talk to my brother? How would I, talk to somebody that, we're not really on the same wavelength, but we need to get on the same wavelength.
Well, having been through deaths of close family members and having had read the book, it's something that a lot of people don't realize that they really should prepare in advance, and whether it's by way of a trust, a will, some sort of directive, that will make a big difference, because at the time of the death, that's the last time or the worst time to be talking about how to deal with it.
Oh, it is the worst time, and it scars people for life. They remember the death not with, death can be a dark subject, but I think the more you address it, the more you realize it and understand it, it's also an opportunity to feel joy for this person's life that's passing. There should be some sort of celebration, I think, in the passing of one's life. I think there's a really good book called Being Mortal by Atul Gawande, and bestsellers list, Harvard MD, and Indian in cultural raising. And in their culture, they look after the older people until they pass away. I mean, the family actually does, not the state. And one of the realizations that Mr. Gawande realized as he was practicing medicine was that he had been trained to keep people alive, but he'd been given absolutely zero training in terms of allowing people to die. Very often, the medical profession is the Hippocratic Oath sort of demands that you keep people alive, and that becomes this sort of overriding goal. And so for me, I got hit by a drunk driver when I was 20, and I considered very carefully how I would want to live and how I wouldn't want to live. And for me, you know, I'm an athletic person, and you know, if I were a quadriplegic, for me, that's a deal breaker. And you know, I say it very cavalierly, but that's because I've been thinking about it since I was 20, and I'm 54 now. And you get used to it, and you go, yeah, I'm all right with that. I've lived a great life. And I think we need to often sort of stop, like Mr. Gawande says, and really celebrate the life that we're living, and consider very carefully exactly how you want to live your life in the end before you pass.
Well, I think that's some sage advice. And as we all know, there's two things that are certain: death and taxes. And being prepared for it and being preparing as much as you can to deal with it, I think, is a great thing.
Yeah.
However, now we get into what we're really here for today, and that is the Coastside music scene. And I wanted you in here because I want you to explain to our listeners all the stuff that you're doing to promote music and musical venues on the Coastside.
Oh, my. Well, my mother did say finish what you start, but I'm scattered all over the place right now with music. It's really exciting. I've always loved music. I don't play any music myself, and I sing within a very small range and poorly, but I love it, and I love dancing. And so in the last like 5 or 6 years, I've come to know a lot of musicians on the coast, and realize that there's a very, very vibrant music culture, and so I don't know, kind of like a Jewish matchmaker. I'm running around meeting people that play music or write songs. And J7 Studios is the studio I discovered just a little while ago when Kelly Morlock was doing her voice audition. I was blown away. I didn't even know it existed, and it's a full-on music studio, professional engineers, and it's an event center. Josh and Mark are they're barking up the same tree as I am too. They're developing J7 as a co-op. I mean, for them, it's not about making money. It's about bringing people together, sharing the art with each other and with people who aren't musicians. The music licensing part of playing music on an internet website gets pretty complicated, and the music industry right now is in a huge flux. When Live 365 went down, there were a lot of small broadcasters, both internet and terrestrial, who were using this service because they basically, created contracts with BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC. And then you would just pay a monthly fee, and it was super simple. They would take care of the reporting. But now it's way more complicated.
Yeah. For our listeners, what is BMI, CSAC, and ASCAP?
Those are the three licensing entities that exist for North America, not Canada. And they license the lyrics that the musician creates and the production that the producer produces. There is another entity called Sound Exchange, not to get too complicated, but to stream music on the internet you also have to have a sound exchange license. But other than my LaserWorks 4th of July show, I don't think I'm going to be streaming. Of course, that would be one of my other projects. I have a vision for a 4th of July LaserWorks show. I grew up overseas quite a bit and didn't have the 4th of July thing, so I really like to have something special on 4th of July. But we're aiming to do music podcasts. I have a show called Gone Fishing with Big Fish and Small Fry and Meerkat, and they're these teenage boys up at the high school, and they do a really cool music playlist. Then we've got Harry the Y is building a show right now called the Eclectic Music Hour, and that will be up pretty soon. And then J7 is putting together a video podcast series of shows, and they'll be redistributing on CoastSiderRadio.com as well.
Yeah, I got to do a plug for J7. I had them in here for an interview, so for our listeners, please go back after you finish this show and look up the interview with the J7 people, because there's a lot of good information there, and whether you're a musician, an artist of any sort, they have a place for you, and they are bringing together a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds. Now, from standpoint of music on the coast, if I had just moved to the coast and someone told me about CoastSiderRadio.com, why would I want to put music and CoastSiderRadio.com together in my mind?
Well, for one thing, I teamed up with Kelly Morlock, who was putting together something called Coast Views Music. It was a calendar of everything music on the coast side. And she was doing it all by herself. And when I discovered her, I said, gee, you know, maybe you could put your content on my website. And, you know, I use Facebook promotion to, you know, make things pop and get the message out to people. And so she's done that. So now we're partners. And it really, the Coast Sider calendar is a great resource for anybody who likes music, whether you live here or, you know, even better when you don't live here and you want, oh, I should come to Half Moon Bay because, oh, there's that band that's going to be playing at J7 Studios. Like a couple weekends ago, they had the Soul Mixer, and that was really cool. They had a girl doing aerial stunts in between the sets and, you know, cool food, cool people, very nice scene. And so the calendar is a great way to find out what's playing. But then, and now we have a relationship with all these musicians, you know, who are on the calendar. They're all on our radar. And so Harry the Y is gobbling them up with interviews. And, you know, it's KHMB, AM 1710 and FM 100.9 also has a series of music shows called Coastside Carousel. And that's also another nice resource to get to know the local musicians. I was trained by Jim Henderson at KHMB. I worked with Jim for a year learning the craft of audio. It all started with a La Nebbia ad. I had to be warm but not sexy for a Mother's Day event. And I fell in love right then and there. And so Jim and I actually do have a partnership relationship as well. I'm all about synergy. He has, you know, radio, and you know that goes up on the air and then it's gone. And with the internet, I have some of his material up on my website as well, allowing him another distribution channel.
Now, I know another thing that's near and dear to your heart is communications with locals in case of emergencies, and I understand you are CERT qualified, and I'm going to ask you to tell us what CERT is and what your involvement is in there and how you see, again, CoastSiderRadio.com being of assistance in that program.
Well, CERT is a FEMA program that was set up, I guess it was back in the 70s or the 80s, and it stands for Community Emergency Response Team. And I'm actually a CERT trainer now. I did the Train the Trainer just this a couple months ago. So I can train CERT people. I work with Dave Cosgrave from the Half Moon Bay. He's a battalion chief for Half Moon Bay. And Ari DeLay, who's the battalion chief for La Honda. And Nick Gotuso, who you often see in the Half Moon Bay review with his smiley face, he is OES. And he gives us a lot of his time helping us coordinate with each other, quite frankly. I was CERT trained maybe 8 or 9 years ago. And then, you know, we lost our fire department, our Half Moon Bay Fire Department. And then we went to Cal Fire, There were complications with some technical issues with being a disaster service worker and workman's comp and things like that. I mean, it gets really complicated. You know, when you have a volunteer helping in an emergency situation, you know, you as a volunteer, you know, want to make sure that you're going to be safe. But if something goes wrong, you also want to make sure you're not going to be, you know, footing the medical bill. So it was a technical problem, but a very serious one, and we solved it. And so since Nick's been on board, we have created something called the CEC, which is the Coastside Emergency Corps. And it's an umbrella for CERT and for the MRC, which is the Medical Reserve Corps, for the HAMs, which are the ham radios, and also a large animal evac, and the Humane Society, and KEEP, which is Cherise McHugh's business sort of oriented VOAD, which it's a community emergency action program. I think I got that right. And she works with all the businesses so that we can develop a database of in an emergency, where is, do we have MOUs, memorandums of understanding with, say, Safeway, so that we can feed people? Do we know where the backhoe is? Do we know who's got the key to the gate? Do we know where the Peninsula Humane Society trailer is? All these kinds of things. And we're the most organized county in California, so we're building quite a bit of claim to fame on that. Dave Cosgrave and I also teach a teen CERT class up at the leadership class up at the high school, Deanna Towers class. And we have this Memorial Day, we're going to be launching our first annual Memorial Day Disaster Prep Weekend. So there's a lot of plans. Oh, did I mention the zombie tsunami disaster weekend I kind of dream about?
Well, no, let's hear about it.
Well, one of the problems with emergency prep is that, you know, getting funding is very difficult. I have been able to get funding from Cal Fire, from OES, and so I donate, you know, quite a bit of my time and some of my money. Like I'm designing magnets for the Memorial Day weekend that will have a calendar that'll start in May, and it'll have the Memorial Day disaster prep weekend, you know, highlighted on the calendar, and it's got a logo for KHMB, so everybody knows that KHMB AM 1710 and FM 100.9 are our disaster broadcast stations. And then we'll have my Coastsider Radio, because I'm sponsoring the magnet. And then Hassett Hardware very generously has allowed us to, you know, be in their store and set up a little table to inform people. And so their logo will be on there. Because they'll also, well, they're one of our main resources for buying disaster preparedness material. So it's CoastsiderRadio.com has been this great opportunity to bring people together in a lot of different streams, whether it's been music. You know, just the calendar itself, you know, I wanted to make sure that nobody will ever miss a harbor meeting again. All of the community and political meetings are there for the, you know, a full 12 months out. There's a self-submission button on the calendar as well, so that if you have an event, you can submit your event for free. And the disaster prep stuff is, you know, sort of just another reflection of the general bringing the Coastsiders together mission.
You know, I'm listening to this, and I have a picture of a juggler juggling chainsaws while they're going off. How do you manage all this? There's only 24 hours in a day.
It's pretty funny. I do use a juggling metaphor when I'm talking to people about how I manage it. I use the Chinese acrobat metaphor. You know, where they have the little plates on the sticks, and they spin the plates, and you have to like keep spinning the plate, you know, to keep it from falling onto the ground and breaking. But it could be chainsaws too. I mean, you know, making sure that everybody's happy, you know. In one of my earlier evolutions, I worked for a gentleman named D. Hawk, and he invented the Bank AmeriCard and then the Visa card. And he was at a stage where he was retired, and we were working on new human management systems. I think he was calling his org BioCivitas at one point. I don't know if he's still around. But one of the organizational kind of epiphanies that was happening back in the early 90s is that you didn't have to have top-down organization. Visa is sort of a hub organization. It's sort of lateral. It's not just up and down, and it doesn't respond in a command-control type way. And so I took his idea and applied it to Coast Sider Radio. So I'm, you know, I'm the founder, general manager. I produce a couple of my own shows like Bedtime Stories. Then I have, I curry the favor with people like Harry the Y, who have a music background and, you know, they're semi-retired and they want to have some fun. For people who want to make money, doing their show too, there's that option. I split the profits of any advertising that, you know, we generate from any show, you know, with the producer that I'm producing with, cause I have my overhead. I have my own studio, also, which is a kind of cool place to visit. It's at 111 Vassar, right down that dirt road opposite the yacht club. I got my signs out there so you can't miss it. It's like with Gone Fishing. They were Fish and Fry at first, but they changed their name to Gone Fishing. Basically, I bought Garrett a refurbished Mac and, you know, taught him how to use Audacity, which took me about 10 minutes because they're smart, these kids. And he is off and running. He has an Apogee mic that sometimes he uses, or he has his Roland RO5. So I give people the equipment. Sometimes they go out and buy their own. Sometimes I buy it for them if they don't have the money and they're 17. But he's an incredibly talented young man, and it's an honor to work with him, and I can't wait to see where he's going to end up. That's also part of the joy of doing this.
I got to tell you a funny story. D-Hawk, his son Dave and I worked for the same company for many years in San Mateo.
Well, that's crazy. And then I remember your wife, Georgia, George's dad used to work with my dad at Ampex.
Yeah.
I mean, well, Silicon Valley brats, right?
Well, not me. I came up from Southern California and discovered the good life up here and never to go back down south permanently again.
Nice.
All right, if you wanted to sum up what you were doing, and again, I want to focus a little more on the music side now, what would you like to say to CoastSiderRadio.com's listeners?
Well, the music licensing question and the monetization for musicians is of deep concern to me. I've been talking with major music producers and musicians, you know, who've got, you know, 20 and 30 years worth of music writing and licensing experience. Everything's very up in the air. I don't believe that BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC get enough money to the musicians to make it really worth their while. And then there was this huge Sony thing with, what was it, Sirius or Pandora? And then they took a lot of licensing money away from musicians. Musicians were just stripped of... you know, the money that they would get from the songs. And the process for licensing is very onerous. You have to literally identify every song you play and calculate the listeners and then pay, you know, that musician their portion of that particular song. I mean, nothing's digitally, you know, enhanced with this system. I mean, you can buy software to do it, but it's really a mess. And there's a few of us, you know, that are working together sort of behind the scenes, and I don't believe that the model's out there yet. And I'm gonna take a stab at trying to do something by creating culture. You know, as a teacher, as somebody who's teaching credential and as an instructional designer, trainer, I train people to do things. How do we train people to realize that we should pay for music? And you know, we've got subscription models, we've got iTunes, you know, we've got the, you know, BMI ASCAP type models and stuff like that. But, you know, SoundCloud is struggling as well. There was a model that was working. There's Bandcamp, there's CD Baby. But if you start talking to musicians, nobody's really happy with the way things are happening. So if we, in our own little way on the coast side, can experiment with, you know, even just writing philosophic treaties that say, did you know that musicians don't get paid very much? I remember one time when I was teaching in middle school, and this is back in the late 80s, early 90s, when getting software wasn't part of the computer budget. So we pretty much copied in disks, and here, I've got 30 disks. Can you copy that program on there? And my brother was a software engineer at the time, and of course, you know, at family dinners, I would you know, tell everybody all the travails of being a computer teacher up in the city at a middle school, you know, where there was no funding. And he urged me very, you know, apocryphally to not do that anymore. He said, you know, you damage the market when you do that. It might take longer to get what you personally want, but if the schools continue to steal software, the software developers won't have enough money to develop the software, and you have a vicious circle. And I think that's kind of what we have in the musical world. I mean, I know a lot of kids, they just steal everything from YouTube. YouTube, you know, you just get the MP3 converter and you're off and running. And you know, the kids themselves, you know, have to sort of realize that no, they're you know, when they're stealing from, I don't know, you know, big people like Justin Timberlake, maybe it doesn't have that much, you know, big a deal, but there's all these secondary musicians that, you know, alternative rock musicians, they're not making that much money and stuff like that. And I just think we could do better as human beings, you know, trying to respect the artistic integrity of other human beings that are taking the time to create stuff that we enjoy.
I tell you what, I support that effort. I think what you're saying is really important, because these people that create this stuff that keep us entertained really deserve their compensation.
Absolutely.
And I hope that CoastSiderRadio.com is a meaningful step towards helping that in the long run. Now, Michelle, I'm going to ask you to give out your email, and then I'm going to tell you why I'm asking you for your email.
My email is mdragony, that would be Dr. Agony, at CoastSiderRadio.com. So there's two R's in the middle there, CoastSiderRadio.com.
Now, why on earth would I ask her for her email? Because if you are interested in becoming involved with CoastSiderRadio.com, if you have an idea for a program you'd like to see there, if you have some suggestions for areas that aren't there that you would like to see there, that is the email to send it to. And again, the email is
mdragony at CoastSiderRadio.com.
I like the Dr. Agony. I hadn't thought of that one before, but this one is going places. This moniker will stick. From now on, we have our grand poobah of CoastSiderRadio.com being the one, the only, Dr. Agony.
No, I look forward to hearing from anybody and everybody who's interested in experimenting with this this little beast of mine. Honestly, it's the internet. It's infinite, and it's infinite as to your imagination. So come play.
And you know, with that, thank you very much for coming in today. That strange noise, by the way, was my phone vibrating, and I'm totally ignoring it. At least it wasn't ringing and creating a major nuisance.
So as a backstory, we're actually in Harry's home, in his own studio, in his house, and we record this in an analog style. And so the phone was buzzing, but it's no longer buzzing. It's good to go.
However, the actual recording is on an SD card, a full-size SD card that will be going through the editing process solely to make sure that there aren't any major blips or other things on there. Michelle, anything else you'd like to say?
That's the way we fly on CoastSiderRadio.com.
All right, you heard it here. And again, if you have any thoughts, suggestions, ideas, mdragony, that's mdragony at CoastSiderRadio.com. She'd love to hear from you. And this has been another episode of CoastSiderRadio.com's Coast Sider Musicians, hosted by, that would be me, Harry the Y.